Extracurricular Activities by Yunha Lee, narrated by Catherine Ho.
When Shuo Xiaodao walked into his temporary quarters on Station Muru 5 and spotted the box, he assumed someone was attempting to assassinate him. It had happened before. Considering his first career, there was even a certain justice to it. He ducked back around the doorway, although even with his reflexes, he would have been too late if it'd been a proper bomb. The air currents in the room would have wafted his biochemical signature to the box and caused it to trigger, or someone could have set up the bomb to go off as soon as the door opened, regardless of who stepped in, or something even less sophisticated. Jadal retreated back down the hallway and waited 1 minute. Two. Nothing. It could just be a package, he thought. Paperwork that he had forgotten? But old habits died hard. He entered again and approached the desk, light-footed. The box, made of eye-searing green plastic, stood out against the bland earth tones of the walls and desk. It measured approximately half a meter in all directions. Its nearest face prominently displayed the gold seal that indicated that station security had cleared it. He didn't trust it for a moment. Spoofing a seal wasn't that difficult. He'd done it himself. He inspected the box's other visible sides without touching it, then spotted a letter pouch affixed to one side and froze. He recognized the handwriting. The address was written in spidery high language, while the name of the recipient, one Garrick Jadao Shkan, was written both in the high language and his birth tongue, Shparoi, for good measure. Oh, Mom, Jadao thought. No one else called him by that name anymore, not even the rest of his family. More important, how had his mother gotten his address? He'd just received his transfer orders last week, and he hadn't written home about it because his mission was classified. He had no idea what his new general wanted him to do. She would tell him tomorrow morning when he reported in. Chitao opened the box, which released a puff of cold air. Inside rested a tub labeled "Keep Refrigerated" in both the high language and Shbaroi. The tub itself contained a pale, waxy-looking solid substance. Is this what I think it is? Time for the letter. Hello, Jadao. Congratulations on your promotion. I hope you enjoy your new command, Moth, and that it has a more pronounceable name than the last one. 1. What promotion? Did she know something he didn't? Scratch that question. She always knew something he didn't. 2. Trust his mother to rate Warmoths, not by their armaments or the efficacy of their star drives, but by their names. Then again, she'd made no secret that she'd hoped he'd wind up a musician like his sire. It had not helped when he pointed out that when he attempted to sing in academy, his fellow cadets had threatened to dump grapefruit soup over his head. Since I expect your eating options will be dismal, I have sent you goose fat rendered from the great-great-great, etc., Grand Gosling of your pet goose when you were a child. She was delicious, by the way. Let me know if you run out, and I'll send more. Love, Mom. So the tub contained goose fat, after all. Jadao had never figured out why his mother sent food items when her idea of cooking was to gussy up instant noodles with an egg and some chopped green onions. All the cooking Jadao knew, he had learned either from his older brother or, on occasion, those of his mother's research assistants who took pity on her kids. What am I supposed to do with this? He wondered. As a cadet, he could have based a prank around it. But as Warmoth commander, he had standards to uphold. More importantly, how could he compose a suitably filial letter of appreciation without, foxes forbid, encouraging her to escalate? Baked goods, fine. Goose fat, less fine. Especially when she wasn't supposed to know he was here in the first place. Some people's families sent them care packages of useful things like liquor, pornography, or really nice cosmetics. Just his luck. At least the mission gave him an excuse to delay writing back until his location was unclassified, even if she knew it anyway. Jadao had heard a number of rumors about his new commanding officer, Brigadier General Kel Essier. Some of them, like the ones about her junior wife's lovers, were none of his business. Others, like Essier's taste in plum wine, weren't relevant, but could come in handy if he needed to scare up a bribe someday. What had really caught his notice was her service record. She had fewer decorations than anyone else who'd served at her rank for a comparable period of time. Either Essier was a political appointee, the Kel military denied the practice, but everyone knew better, or she was sitting on a cache of classified medals. Jadao had a number of those himself. Did his mother know about those, too? Although Station Muru 5 was a secondary military base, Jadao had his suspicions about any secondary base that had a general in residence even temporarily. That, or Essier was disgraced, and Kel Command couldn't think of anywhere else to dump her. Jadao had a standard method for dealing with new commanders, which was to research them as if he planned to assassinate them. Needless to say, he never expressed it in those terms to his comrades. He'd come up with two promising ways to get rid of Essier. First, she collected meditation foci made of staggeringly luxurious materials. One of her officers had let slip that her latest obsession was antique lacquerware. Planting a bomb or toxin in a collector-grade item wouldn't be risky so much as expensive. He'd spent a couple hours last night brainstorming ways to steal one, just for the hell of it. Lucky that he didn't have to follow through. The other method took advantage of the poorly planned location of the firing range on this level relative to the general's office, and involved shooting her through several walls and a door with a high-powered rifle and burrower ammunition. Jadao hated burrower ammunition, not because it didn't work, but because it did. He had a lot of ugly scars on his torso from the time a burrower had almost killed him. That being said, he also believed in using the appropriate tool for the job. No one had upgraded Muru 5 for the past few decades. Its computer grid ran on outdated hardware, making it easy for him to pull copies of all the maps he pleased. He'd also hacked into the security cameras long enough to check the layout of the general's office. The setup made him despair of the architects who had designed the whole wretched thing. On top of that, Essier had set up her desk so a visitor would see it framed beautifully by the doorway, with her chair perfectly centered. Great for impressing visitors, less great for making yourself a difficult target. Then again, attending to Essier's safety wasn't his job. Jadao showed up at Essier's office 7 minutes before the appointed time. "Whiskey?" said her aide. If only, Jadao thought. He recognized it as one he couldn't afford. "No, thank you," he said with the appropriate amount of regret. He didn't trust special treatment. "Your loss," said the aide. After another 2 minutes, she checked her slate. "Go on in. The general is waiting for you." As Jadao had predicted, General Essier sat dead center behind her desk, framed by the doorway and two statuettes on either side of the desk, gilded ash hawks carved from onyx. Essier had dark skin and close-shaven hair, and the height and fine-spun bones of someone who had grown up in low gravity. The black and gold Kel uniform suited her. Her gloved hands rested on the desk in perfect symmetry. Jadao bet she looked great in propaganda videos. Jadao saluted, fist to shoulder. "Commander Shuos Jadao, reporting is ordered, sir." Have a seat, Essier said. He did. You're wondering why you don't have a Warmoth assignment yet. The thought had crossed my mind, yes. Essier smiled. The smile was like the rest of her, beautiful and calculated, and not a little deadly. I have good news and bad news for you, Commander. The good news is that you're due a promotion. Jadao's first reaction was not gratitude or pride, but how did my mother? Fortunately, a lifetime of how did my mother enabled him to keep his expression smooth and instead say, and the bad news? Is it true what they say about your battle record? This always came up. You have my profile. You're good at winning. I wasn't under the impression that the Kel military found this objectionable, sir. Quite right, she said. The situation is this. I have a mission in mind for you, but it will take advantage of your unique background. Unique background was a euphemism for. We don't have many commanders who can double as emergency special forces. Most Kel with training in special ops stayed in the infantry instead of seeking command in the space forces. Jadao made an inquiring noise. Perform well, and you'll be given the Fangmoth Sieve of Glass, which heads my third tactical group. A bribe, albeit one that might cause trouble. Essier had six tactical groups, a newly minted group tactical commander being assigned third instead of sixth. Had she had a problem with her former third position commander? My former third took early retirement, Essier said in answer to his unspoken question. They were caught with a small collection of trophies. Let me guess, Jadao said. Trophies taken from heretics. Just so. Third tactical is badly shaken. Fourth has excellent rapport with her group, and I don't want to promote her out of it. But it's an opportunity for you. And the mission? Essier leaned back. You attended Shuos Academy with Shuos Meng.
I did, Jadao said.
They'd gone by Jay Meng as a cadet. We've been in touch on and off. Meng had joined a marriage some years back. Jadao had commissioned a painting of five foxes, one for each person in the marriage, and sent it along with his best wishes. Meng wrote regularly about their kids. They couldn't be made to shut up about them. And Jadao sent gifts on cue. Everything from hand-bound volumes of Kel jokes to fancy gardening tools. At least they'd been sold to him as gardening tools. They looked suspiciously like they could double for heavy-duty surgical work. Why? What has Meng been up to? Under the name Ahun Garav, they've been in command of the Merchanter, Moonsweet Blossom. Jadao cocked an eyebrow at Essier.
That's not a Shuos vessel.
It did, however, sound like an Andan one. The Andan faction liked naming their trade moths after flowers. By Merchanter, do you mean spy? Yes, Essier said with charming directness. 26 days ago, one of the Blossom's crew sent a code red to Shuos intelligence. This is all she was able to tell us. Essier retrieved a slate from within the desk and tilted it to show him a video. She needn't have bothered with the visuals. The combination of poor lighting, camera jitter, and static made them impossible to interpret. The audio was little better.
Blossom, code red to Overwatch. Garavzin.
Frustratingly, the static made the next few words unintelligible.
Do station, you'd better.
The report of a gun, then another, then silence. Your task is to investigate the situation at Dew Station in the Gua reality and see if the crew and any of the intelligence they've gathered can be recovered. the Shuos Heptarch suggested that you would be an ideal candidate for the mission. Kel Command was amenable.
I just bet, Jadao thought. He had once worked directly under his Heptarch, and while he'd been one of her better assassins, he didn't miss those days. Is this the only incident with the Gua reality that has taken place recently, or are there others?
The Gua'en are approaching one of their regularly scheduled regime upheavals, Essier said. According to the diplomats, there's a good chance that the next elected government will be less amenable to Heptarchate interests. We want to go in, uncover what happened, and get out before things turn topsy-turvy.
All right, Jadao said. So taking a war moth in would be inflammatory. What resources will I have instead?
Well, that's the bad news, Essier said, entirely too cheerfully. Tell me, Commander, have you ever wanted to own a merchant troop?
The troop consisted of 8 trade moths named Carp 1 to Carp 4, then Carp 7 to Carp 10. They occupied one of the station's docking bays. Someone had painted each vessel with distended carp figures in orange and white. It did not improve their appearance. The usual commander of the troop introduced herself as Churioi Haval, not her real name. She was portly, had a squint, and wore gaudy gilt jewelry, all excellent ways to convince people that she was an ordinary merchant and not, say, Kel Special Ops. It hadn't escaped his attention that she frowned ever so slightly when she spotted his sidearm, a Paterner 52, which wasn't standard Kel issue.
You're not bringing that, are you? She said.
No, I'd hate to lose it on the other side of the border, Jadao said. Besides, I don't have a plausible explanation for why a boring communications tech is running around with a Shuos handgun.
I could always hold on to it for you.
Jadao wondered if he'd ever get the Paterner back if he took her up on the offer. It hadn't come cheap.
That's kind of you, but I'll have the station store it for me. By the way, what happened to Carp 5 and 6?
Beats me, Haval said. Before my time. The Guan authorities have never hassled us about it. They're already used to, paraphrase, odd heptarchic numerological superstitions.
She eyed Jadao critically, which made her look squintier.
Begging your pardon, but do you have undercover experience?
What a refreshing question. Everyone knew the Shuos for their spies, saboteurs, and assassins, even though the analysts, administrators, and cryptologists did most of the real work. One of his instructors had explained that you will spend hours in front of a terminal developing posture problems was far less effective at recruiting potential cadets than join the Shuos for an exciting future as a secret agent, assuming your classmates don't kill you before you graduate. Most people who met Jadao assumed he'd killed an improbable number of people as Shuos infantry. Never mind that he'd been responsible for far more deaths since joining the regular military.
You'd be surprised at the things I know how to do, Jadao said.
Well, I hope you're good with cover identities, Haval said. No offense, but you have a distinctive name.
That was a tactful way of saying that the Kel didn't tolerate many Shuos line officers. Most Shuos seconded to the Kel worked in intelligence. Jadao had a reputation for, as one of his former aides had put it, being expendable enough to send into no-win situations, but too stubborn to die. Jadao smiled at Haval and said, I have a good memory. The rest of his crew also had civilian cover names. A tall, muscular man strolled up to them. Jadao surreptitiously admired him. The gold mesh tattoo over the right side of his face contrasted handsomely with his dark skin.
Too bad he was almost certainly Kel, and therefore off-limits.
"This is Ree Teshet," Haval said. "When he isn't watching horrible melodramas."
"You have no sense of culture," Teshet said.
"He's the lieutenant colonel in charge of our infantry."
"Damn, definitely Kel then, and in his chain of command at that."
"A pleasure, Colonel," Jadao said.
Teshet's returning smile was slow and wicked and completely unprofessional.
"Get out of the habit of using ranks," he said. "Just Teshet, please."
"I hear you like whiskey."
Off limits, Jadao reminded himself, despite the quickening of his pulse. Best to be direct.
"I'd rather not get you in trouble."
Haval was looking to the side with a, "Where have I seen this dance before?" expression. Teshet laughed.
"The fastest way to get us caught is to behave like you have the Kel Code of Conduct tattooed across your forehead. Whereas no one will suspect you of being a hotshot commander if you're sleeping with one of your crew."
"I don't fuck people deadlier than I am, sorry," Jadao said demurely.
"Wrong answer,"
Haval said, still not looking at either of them.
"Now he's going to think of you as a challenge."
"Also, I know your reputation," Teshet said to Jadao. "Your kill count has got to be higher than mine by an order of magnitude."
Jadao ignored that. "How often do you make trade runs into the Gua reality?"
2 or 3 times a year, Haval said. "The majority of the runs are to maintain the fiction. The question is, do you have a plan?"
He didn't blame her for her skepticism. "Tell me again how much cargo space we have," Haval told him.
"We sometimes take approved cultural goods," Teshet said. "In a data storage format negotiated during the second treaty of..."
"Don't bore him," Haval said. "The trade is our job. He's just here for the explodey bits."
"No, I'm interested," Jadao said. "The second treaty of Mui'en. Am I right?" Haval blinked.
"You have remarkably good pronunciation."
"Most people can't manage the tones. Do you speak Tuan Gua?"
"Regrettably not. I'm only fluent in 4 languages, and that's not one of them." Of the 4, Sparoi was only spoken on his birth planet, making it useless for career purposes.
"If you have some Shuos notion of sneaking in a virus amid all the lectures on flower arranging and the dueling tournament videos and the plays, forget it," Teshet said. "Their operating systems are so different from ours that you'd have better luck getting a magpie and a turnip to have a baby."
"Oh, not at all," Jadao said. "How odd would it look if you brought in a shipment of goose fat?" Haval's mouth opened.
"Closed,"
Teshet said.
"Excuse me?"
"Not literally goose fat," Jadao conceded. "I don't have enough for that, and I don't imagine the novelty would enable you to run a sufficient profit. I assume you have to at least appear to be trying to make a profit."
"They like real profits even better," Haval said.
Diverted, Teshet said,
"You have goose fat.
Whatever for?"
"Long story," Jadao said. "But instead of goose fat, I'd like to run some of that variable coefficient lubricant." Haval rubbed her chin.
"I don't think you could get approval to trade the formula or the associated manufacturing processes."
"Not that," Jadao said. "Actual canisters of lubricant. Is there someone in the Gua reality on the way to our luckless Shuos friend who might be willing to pay for it?" Haval and Teshet exchanged baffled glances. Jadao could tell what they were thinking. Are we victims of some weird bet our commander has going on the side?
"There's no need to get creative,"
Haval said, in a commendably diplomatic voice.
"Cultural goods are quite reliable."
You think this is creativity? Jadao thought.
It's not that. Two battles ago, my fang moth was almost blown in two because our anti-missile defenses glitched. If we hadn't used the lubricant as a stopgap sealant, we wouldn't have made it.
That much was even true.
If you can't offload all of it, I'll find another use for it.
You do know you can't cook with lubricant, Teshit said. Though I wonder if it's good for...
Haval stomped on his toe.
You already have plenty of the medically approved stuff, she said crushingly. No need to risk getting your private parts cemented into place.
Hey, Teshit said, you never know when you'll need to improvise. Jadao was getting the impression that Essir had not assigned him the best of her undercover teams. Certainly, they were the least disciplined Kel he'd run into in a while, but he supposed long periods undercover had made them more casual about regulations. No matter, he'd been dealt worse hands.
I've let you know what I want done, and I've already checked that the station has enough lubricant to supply us. Make it happen.
If you insist,
Haval said.
Meanwhile,
don't forget to get your immunizations.
Will do, Jadao said, and strode off to medical. Jadao spent the first part of the voyage alternately learning basic Tlen Gua, memorizing his cover identity, and studying up on the Gua reality. The Tlen Gua course suffered some oddities. He couldn't see the use of some of the vocabulary items, like the one for navel. But he couldn't manage to unlearn it either, so there it was, taking up space in his brain. As for the cover identity, he'd had better ones, but he supposed the Kel could only do so much on short notice. He was now Arioi Sren, one of Haval's distant cousins by marriage. He had three spouses, with whom he had quarreled recently over a point of interior decoration. I don't know anything about interior decoration, Jadao had said, to which Haval retorted,
that's probably what caused the argument.
The documents had included loving photographs of the home in question, an apartment in a dome city floating in the upper reaches of a very pretty gas giant. Jadao had memorized the details before destroying them. While he couldn't say how well the decor coordinated, he was good at layouts and kill zones. In any case, Sren was on vacation to escape the squabbling. Teshit had suggested that a guilt-inducing affair would round out the cover identity. Jadao said he'd think about it. Jadao was using spray-on temporary skin plus a high-collared shirt to conceal multiple scars, including the wide one at the base of his neck. The temporary skin itched, which couldn't be helped. He hoped no one would strip-search him, but in case someone did, he didn't want to have to explain his old gunshot wounds. Teshit had also suggested that he stop shaving. The Kel disliked beards. But Jadao could only deal with so much itching. The hardest part was not the daily skin seal regimen, but getting used to wearing civilian clothes. The Kel uniform included gloves, and Jadao felt exposed going around with naked hands, but keeping his gloves would have been a dead giveaway, so he'd just have to live with it. The Guan fascinated him most of all. Heptarchic diplomats called their realm the Gua reality. Linguists differed on just what the word rendered as reality meant. The majority agreed that it referred to the Guan belief that all dreams took place in the same noosphere, connecting the dreamers, and that even inanimate objects dreamed. Guan protocols permitted traders to dock at designated stations. Haval quizzed Jadao endlessly on the relevant etiquette. Most of it consisted of keeping his mouth shut and letting Haval talk, which suited him fine. While the Guan provided interpreters, Haval said cultural differences were the real problem. Above all, she added, if anyone challenges you to a duel, don't, just don't, look blank and plead ignorance.
Duel? Jadao said, interested.
I knew we were going to have this conversation, Haval said glumly.
They don't use swords, so get that idea out of your head.
I didn't bring my dueling sword anyway, and Sren wouldn't know how, Jitao said.
Guns?
Oh, no, she said. They use pathogens, designer pathogens. Besides the fact that their duels can go on for years, I've never heard that you had a clue about genetic engineering.
No, Jidao said. That would be my mother.
Maybe next time he could suggest to Essir that his mother be sent in his place. His mother would adore the chance to talk shop. Of course, then he'd be out of a job. Besides, I'd rather avoid bringing a plague back home. They claim they have an excellent safety record.
Of course they would.
How fast can they culture the things?
That was one of the things we were trying to gather data on. If they're good at diseasing up humans, they may be just as good at manufacturing critters that like to eat synthetics.
While true of their tech base in general, Haval said, they won't have top-grade labs at Dew Station.
Good to know, Jidao said.
Jidao and Teshit also went over the intelligence on Dew Station.
It's nice that you're taking a personal interest, Teshit said. But if you think we're taking the place by storm, you've been watching too many dramas.
If Kel Special Forces aren't up for it, Jidao said very dryly, you could always send me. One of me won't do much good, though.
Don't be absurd, Teshit said. Essir would have my head if you got hurt.
How many people have you assassinated?
Classified, Jidao said.
Teshit gave a can't blame me for trying shrug.
Not to say I wouldn't love to see you in action, but it isn't your job to run around doing the boring infantry work.
How do you mean to get the crew out? Assuming they survived, which is a big if.
Jidao tapped his slate and brought up the schematics for one of their cargo shuttles.
5 per trader, he said musingly.
Dew Station won't let us land the shuttles however we please.
Did I say anything about landing them?
Before Teshit could say anything further, Jidao added, you might have to cross the hard way, with suits and web cord. How often have your people drilled that?
We've done plenty of extravehicular, Teshit said. But we're going to need some form of cover.
I'm aware of that, Jidao said. He brought up a calculator and did some figures. That will do nicely.
Sren?
Jidao grinned at Teshit. I want those shuttles emptied out. Everything but propulsion and navigation. Get rid of suits, seats, all of it.
Even life support?
Everything. And it'll have to be done in the next 17 days, so the Guan can't catch us at it.
What do we do with the innards?
Dump them. I'll take full responsibility.
Teshit's eyes crinkled.
I knew I was going to like you.
Uh-oh, Jidao thought. But he kept that to himself.
What are you going to be doing? Teshit asked.
Going over the dossiers before we have to wipe them, Jidao said.
Meng's in particular. He'd believed in Meng's fundamental competence even back in Academy before they'd learned confidence in themselves. What had gone wrong? Jidao had first met Shuos Meng, Zai Meng then, during an exercise at Shuos Academy. The instructor had assigned them to work together. Meng was chubby and had a vine and compass tattoo on the back of their left hand, identifying them as coming from a merchanter lineage. That day, the class of 29 cadets met not in the usual classroom, but a windowless space with a metal table in the front and rows of 2-person desks with benches that looked like they'd been scrubbed clean of graffiti multiple times. Wars come and go, but graffiti is forever, as one of Jadao's lovers liked to say. Besides the door leading out into the hall, there were 2 other doors, neither of which had a sign indicating where they led. Tangles of pipes led up the walls, and storage bins were piled beside them. Jidao had the impression that the room had been pressed into service at short notice. Jidao and Meng sat at their assigned seats and hurriedly whispered introductions to each other while the instructor read off the rest of the pairs.
Zai Meng, Jidao's partner said.
I should warn you, I barely pass the weapons qualifications, but I'm good with languages.
Then a quick grin.
And hacking. I figured you'd make a good partner.
Garrick Jadow, he said. I can handle guns.
Understatement. He was third in the class in weapons. And if Meng had, as they implied, shuffled the assignments, that meant they were one of the better hackers.
Why did you join up?
I want to have kids, Meng said.
Come again?
I want to marry into a rich lineage, Meng said. That means making myself more respectable. When the recruiter showed up, I said, what the hell?
The instructor smiled coolly at the two of them, and they shut up.
She said,
if you're here, it's because you've indicated an interest in field work. Like you, we want to find out if it's something you have any aptitude for, and if not, what better use we can make of your skills.
You'd better have some skills went unsaid.
You may expect to be dropped off in the woods or some such nonsense. We don't try to weed out first years quite that early. No. This initial exercise will take place right here.
The instructor's smile widened.
There's a photobomb in this room. It won't cause any permanent damage, but if you don't disarm it, you're all going to be walking around wearing ridiculous dark glasses for a week. At least one cadet knows where the bomb is. If they keep its location a secret from the rest of you, they win. Of course, they'll also go around with ridiculous dark lenses, but you can't have everything. On the other hand, if someone can persuade that person to give up the secret, everyone wins, so to speak.
The rows of cadets stared at her. Jadow leaned back in his chair and considered the situation. Like several others in the class, he had a rifle re-exam in 3 days and preferred to take it with undamaged vision.
You have 4 hours, the instructor said. There's one restroom. She pointed to one of the doors.
I expect it to be in impeccable condition at the end of the 4 hours. She put her slate down on the table at the head of the room. Call me with this if you figure it out. Good luck. With that, she walked out. The door whooshed shut behind her.
We're screwed, Meng said.
Just because I'm in the top 20 on the leaderboard in Elite Thundersnake 900 doesn't mean I could disarm real bombs if you yanked out my toenails.
Don't give people ideas, Jadow said.
Meng didn't appear to find the joke funny. This is about people, not explosives. Two pairs of cadets had gotten up and were beginning a search of the room. A few were talking to each other in hushed, tense voices. Still others were looking around at their fellows with hard, suspicious eyes.
Meng said in Shba Roy,
do you know where the bomb is? Jadow blinked. He hadn't expected anyone at the academy to know his birth tongue. Of course, by speaking in an obscure, low language, Meng was drawing attention to them.
Jadow shook his head.
Meng looked around, hands bunching the fabric of their pants.
What do you recommend we do?
In the high language, Jadow said, you can do whatever you want. He retrieved a deck of Jengzai cards. He always had one in his pocket, and shuffled it. Do you play?
You realize we're being graded on this, right? Hell, they've got cameras on us.
They're watching the whole thing.
Exactly, Jadow said. I don't see any point in panicking.
You're out of your mind, Meng said. They stood up, met the other cadets appraising stares, then sat down again.
Too bad hacking the instructor's slate won't get us anywhere. I doubt she left the answer key in an unencrypted file on it.
Jadow gave Meng a quizzical look, wondering if there was anything more behind the remark. But no, Meng had put their chin in their hands and was brooding.
If only you knew, Jadow thought, and dealt out a game of solitaire. It was going to be a very dull game because he had stacked the deck, but he needed to focus on the people around him, not the game. The cards were just to give his hand something to do.
He had considered taking up crochet, but thanks to an incident earlier in the term, crochet hooks, knitting needles, and fountain pens were no longer permitted in class. While this was a stupid restriction, considering that most of the cadets were learning unarmed combat, he wasn't responsible for the administration's foibles.
"Jadao," Meng said, "maybe you've got high enough marks that you can blow off this exercise, but since I'm not blowing it off was unlikely to be believed." Jadao flipped over a card, three of doors, just as he'd arranged, and smiled at Meng. So Meng had had their pick of partners and had chosen him? Well, he might as well do something to justify the other cadets' faith in him. After all, despite their earlier remark, weapons weren't the only things that Jadao was good at. "Do me a favor and we can get this sorted," he said. "You want to win? I'll show you winning." Now Jadao was attracting some of the hostile stares as well. Good. It took the heat off Meng, who didn't seem to have a great tolerance for pressure. "Stay out of wet work," he thought, but they could have that chat later. Or one of the instructors would. Meng fidgeted, caught themselves. "Yeah? Get me the slate." "You mean the instructor slate? You can't possibly have figured it out already, unless..." Meng's eyes narrowed. "Less thinking, more acting," Jadao said, and got up to retrieve the slate himself. A pair of cadets, a girl and a boy, blocked his way.
"You know something," said the girl. "Spill."
Jadao knew them from analysis. The two were often paired there, too. The girl's name was Noe Irin. The boy had five names and went by Veller. Jadao wondered if Veller wanted to join a faction so he could trim things down to a nice, compact, two-part name. Shuos Veller. Much less of a mouthful. Then again, Jadao had a three-part name, also unusual, if less unwieldy, so he shouldn't criticize. "Just a hunch," Jadao said. Irin bared her teeth.
"He always says it's a hunch," she said to no one in particular. "I hate that."
"It was only twice," Jadao said, which didn't help his case. He backed away from the instructor's desk and sat down, careful not to jostle the solitaire spread. "Take the slate apart. The photobomb's there."
Irin's lip curled. "If this is one of your fucking clever tricks, Jay..."
Meng blinked at the nickname. "You two sleeping together, Jadao?" they asked, sotto voce. "Not sotto enough." "No," Jadao and Irin said at the same time. Veller ignored the byplay and went straight for the tablet, which he bent to without touching it. Jadao respected that. Veller had the physique of a tiger wrestler. Now there was someone he wouldn't mind being caught in bed with. A broad face and a habitually bland, dreamy expression. Jadao wasn't fooled. Veller was almost as smart as Irin, had already been tracked into bomb disposal, and was less prone to flights of temper.
"Is there a tool closet in here?" Veller said. "I need a screwdriver."
"You don't carry your own anymore?" Jadao said.
"I told him he should," Irin said. "But he said they were too similar to knitting needles, as if anyone in their right mind would knit with a pair of screwdrivers."
"I think he meant that they're stabby things that can be driven into people's eyes," Jadao said.
"I didn't ask for your opinion, Jay."
Jadao put his hands up in a conciliatory gesture and shut his mouth. He liked Irin and didn't want to antagonize her any more than necessary. The last time they'd been paired together, they'd done quite well. She would come around. She just needed time to work through the implications of what the instructor had said. She was one of those people who preferred to think about things without being interrupted. One of the other cadets wordlessly handed Veller a set of screwdrivers. Veller mumbled his thanks and got to work. The class watched, breathless.
"There," Veller said at last. "See that there? All hooked in? Don't know what the timer is, but there it is.
I find it very suspicious that you forfeited your chance to show up everyone else in this exercise, Erin said to Jadao. Is there anyone else who knew?
Erin, Jadao said. I don't think the instructor told anyone where she'd left the photobomb. She just stuck it in the slate because that was the last place we'd look.
The test was meant to reveal which of us would backstab the others, but honestly, that's so counterproductive. I say we disarm the damn thing and skip to the end. Erin's eyes crossed, and her lips moved as she recited the instructor's words under her breath. That was another thing Jadao liked about her. Erin had a great memory. Admittedly, that made it difficult to cheat her at cards, as he'd found out the hard way. He'd spent 3 hours doing her kitchen duties for her the one time he'd tried. He liked people who could beat him at cards.
It's possible, she said grudgingly after she'd reviewed the assignment's instructions.
Disarmed, Veller said shortly after that.
He pulled out the photobomb and left it on the desk, then set about reassembling the slate. Jadao glanced over at Meng. For a moment, his partner's expression had no anxiety in it, but a raptor's intent focus. Interesting. What were they watching for?
I hope I get a quiet posting at a desk somewhere, Meng said.
Then why'd you join up? Erin said. Jadao put his hand over Meng's, even though he was sure that they had just lied. Don't mind her, he said. You'll do fine.
Meng nodded and smiled up at him.
Why do I have the feeling that I'm not remotely the most dangerous person in the room? Jadao thought. But he returned Meng's smile all the same. It never hurt to have allies.